can make your way in and find you a spot to be seated. We'll start round two. Okay, while everybody's coming in, I'm going to read something to you, and you see if you can figure out where I'm reading from. We'll find out who's been doing their Bible reading. Those humanistic people I talked about are in a dark spiral downward. But if you think that leaves you on high ground where you can point your finger at others, think again. Every time you criticize someone, you condemn yourself. It takes one to know one. Judgmental criticism of others is a well-known way of escaping detection in your own crimes and misdemeanors. But God isn't so easily diverted. He sees right through all such smoke screens and holds you to whatever you've done. Anybody figured out where I'm reading from yet? If you want to guess, tell me. You didn't think, did you, that just by pointing your finger at others, you would distract God from seeing all your misdoings and from coming down on you hard? Or did you think that because He's such a nice God, He'd let you off the hook? Better think this one through from the beginning. God is kind, but He's not soft. In kindness, He takes us firmly by the hand and leads us into a radical life change. You're not getting by with anything. Every refusal and avoidance of God adds fuel to the fire. The day is coming when it's going to blaze hot and high. God's fiery and righteous judgment. Make no mistake, in the end you get what's coming to you. Real life for those who work on God's side, but to those who insist on getting their own way, and take the path of least resistance, fire. Anybody figured it out yet? Romans chapter 2. Let's open it up there if you're not there, and you can read along with the paraphrasing here. If you go against the grain, you get splinters, regardless of which neighborhood you're from, what your parents taught you, what schools you attended. But if you embrace the way God does things, there are wonderful payoffs, again, without regard to where you're from or how you were brought up. Being a Jew won't give you an automatic stamp of approval. God pays no attention to what others say or what you think about you. He makes up His own mind. If you sin without knowing what you're doing, God takes that into account. But if you sin knowing full well what you're doing, that's a different story entirely. Merely hearing God's law is a waste of your time if you don't do what He commands. Doing, not hearing, is what makes a difference with God. When outsiders who have never heard of God's law follow it more or less by instinct, they confirm its truth by their obedience. They show that God's law is not something alien, imposed on us from without, but woven into the very fabric of our creation. There's something deep within them that echoes God's yes and no, right and wrong. Their response to God's yes and no will become public knowledge on the day God makes His final decision about every man and woman. The message from God that I proclaim through Jesus Christ takes into account all these. If you're brought up Jewish, don't assume that you can lean back in the arms of your religion and take it easy, feeling smug because you're an insider to God's revelation, a connoisseur of the best things of God, informed of the latest doctrines. I have a special word of caution for you who are sure you have it all together yourselves. And because you know God's revealed word inside and out, feel qualified to guide others through their blind alleys and dark nights and confused emotions to God. While you're guiding others, who's going to guide you. I'm quite serious. While preaching, don't steal, are you going to rob people blind? Who would suspect you? The same with adultery. The same with idolatry. You can get by with almost anything if you front it with eloquent talk about God and His law. The line from Scripture, it's because of you that the Jews are outsiders, are down on God, shows it's an old problem that isn't going to go away. Circumcision, the surgical ritual that marks you as a Jew, is great if you live in accord with the law, but if you don't, it's worse than not being circumcised. The reverse is also true. The uncircumcised who keep God's way are as good as the circumcised. In fact, better. Better to keep God's law uncircumcised than to break it circumcised. Don't you see, it's not the cut of a knife that makes a Jew. You become a Jew by who you are. It's the mark of God on your heart, not of a knife on your skin, that makes a Jew. And recognition comes from God, not legalistic critics. Now, I ran across that this week as I was cruising around the internet. I'm not necessarily wholeheartedly recommending this paraphrase. It is extremely loose. Okay, it's not a translation at all. But it's kind of like a commentary, a really short commentary. And sometimes it's worth reading something like that if you feel like that the author has captured at least the heart or the gist of what's being said. And sometimes in the middle of being really deep into a passage of Scripture and looking up Greek words and so forth, I find that I need something to pull me up a little higher so I can see a broader picture than just a verse or two words or something in a passage. And so something like this I find to be beneficial to myself as I'm studying, so I keep it off to the side, and just every hour or so I'll just reach over there and read it again myself to remind myself, you know, that this has a big umbrella over all the top of it and not just be down really intricately into the lesson, but be able to apply it. Dan, you had something? I agree. That's right. And sometimes if you understand a paraphrase, even read it from a paraphrase, if you understand that it's not a translation, but it is a paraphrase, it's like reading a commentary. Dan's comment for the recording is that he's found it beneficial in reading to read from various translations, and sometimes you get a different perspective. Sometimes somebody saying something in a different way really hits us. It gives us an impact that we didn't get, because, like he said, when you've read something over and over and over and over, it's like proofreading your own work. You don't do a very good job because you already know what it's going to say, and so you don't see the mistakes. You don't pick up on things, and you anticipate what it's going to say. And so when it says it in different words, sometimes it opens our hearts to some things that we otherwise wouldn't have or wouldn't gain from it. I want to take a moment and express my appreciation to Eric Allred last week for teaching the class. I listened to it. He did an outstanding job, and I know that you'll agree with that, and I hope that you express that to him, because the section that he taught on is not an easy section, and he did a great job, and I hope that if you haven't, you'll take a moment to express that to him. I mean, here's a really young guy that's got a grasp on some things really early in his life, and so I really do appreciate him, first of all, being willing. Not many people are willing to stand up for a class of 170 people or so and teach anything, much less something like this. So I really do appreciate him doing that. He did a great job, and I hope that you'll express that to him. Drop him a note or tell him or take him out to lunch or something or other, okay? But he did a great job. I would stop right here for a moment and ask if there are any questions that are just burning on your heart right now. And as you ask them, understand I'll answer it if I want to, and I'll put you off if I want to. But if you have If you have there are questions that you have on your heart right now that are going to be answered as we study through. But I don't want to put you off from asking that question. So is there anybody that has a question that's just burning on your heart right now from what you've studied that you would like to be addressed? And you know, this is kind of the downside of having a really large class as opposed to 12 people in a circle in your home, because most people are a little intimidated to ask their question because they'll think it might sound stupid. And when you got 12 people around in the room, after 3 or 4 weeks, we get to know one another and we know we all ask stupid questions. But there are really no stupid questions, okay? Because if it's a question you don't understand, then that's where you get hung up. Eric had kind of the fun, a part that I really enjoy teaching. And so I'm going to go back over it at least real broadly here and make sure that we're all on the same page. Romans 1:18 to 3:20 is talking about how and why a person's lost. It is, you can say it a number of different ways. It's how we try to be saved by keeping law. It's how we try to be good enough to go to heaven. Any way that you want to phrase that, whatever melts your butter in that, then you phrase it that way. And we're, one of the things that comes up as we're talking about law and talking about judgment is we begin to think, it comes to all of our minds, well, okay, how's God going to judge this person who never had a chance to hear the gospel? And so from Romans chapter 2, we pull three principles that God will use to judge the law keeper. And a person who is never heard the gospel, he doesn't have a choice. He's going to be judged by law. What's it like to be under law? What's it like to be judged by law? And I'm really, really convinced that we haven't done enough study about law. You've heard me say a lot about it. Maybe some of you are tired of hearing me preach and teach about law, but I'm not through yet. So just strap your seatbelt on, because we've got some more. Because I'm convinced that until and unless you understand what it's like to live under law and be judged by law, then you're not going to really crave God's mercy and God's grace like you must in order to really appreciate the gospel. Because those of you who are in the first assembly this morning can pick up on some of what we're saying here. And if you've read the bulletin article, then you can pick up at least on some applications of some of the things that we're saying right here. Three principles that God will use to judge the person under law, the person who's never heard the gospel, the person who doesn't know about Jesus Christ, who's never heard about baptism in the church. I'm saying that those things associated with the gospel, Jesus Christ and the cross and baptism and the church and the Lord's Supper and attending church and all those things have nothing to do with why you're lost. Let's just get it all on the table right here. They have nothing to do with why you're lost. They have everything to do with how you get saved, but they have nothing to do with why you're lost. Because if Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, man would be lost. If that's true, then the things associated with him are not why we're lost. Now, that's not hard to understand, right? If Jesus had never come to this earth, and there had never been baptism and the gospel and the church and all those things associated with salvation, if those things had never been taught, if it never happened, man would be lost. Jesus said the Son of Man came to, and Eric really brought this out last week, the Son of Man came to seek and save that which was lost. Not will be, but was lost. Man was lost apart from the gospel. Man was lost under law. The older brother was just as lost as the younger brother. Now you got to let that soak in. And I'm not sure we believe it yet. But the older brother was as lost as the younger brother in the prodigal son story. And that's really serious for us churchgoers, because we have a tendency to think that we're better than the younger brothers. And we may be in more serious condition than they are, because the younger brothers know they're lost. And everybody else knows they're lost. And in case he don't know it, then everybody's going to tell him that he is. But they're not going to tell us older brothers that we're lost, because we don't look lost and we don't feel lost. But we are lost. And it takes the same thing to save older brothers that it does younger brothers. Exactly the same thing. And we've got to get that in our minds and in our hearts. And in essence, that's what we're finding out in 1:18 to 3:20. We're all in the same boat. The ground at the foot of the cross is, somebody say it. I said it enough times, somebody ought to know it. Level. Thank you. The ground at the foot of the cross is level. Nobody stands any closer to God, any nearer to God than anybody else. We're all in the same boat. Our sin has separated us from God. And we can't do anything to reconcile ourselves to God. That's the message of 1:18 to 3:20. And so for those of us who feel pretty good about our life, this section is for us. And if you've hoped that you can be good enough, somehow you've held out hope that just somehow you can be good enough to get to heaven, this section is for you. You cannot be. And so if you cannot be, it would probably be really wise of you to quit trying to earn your salvation. Because you can't. And so 1:18 to 3:20 is how and why we're lost. And here's our man that's never had a chance to hear the gospel. And how's God going to judge him? And we pull three principles out. Romans chapter 2, verse 1. The first one is self-judgments. Have you ever told somebody it's wrong to do something and turned around and done that very same thing yourself? Then with your own mouth, you condemned yourself. You told somebody, you shouldn't do that. It's wrong for you to do that. Don't do that. And then you turn around in some form or other, even though you put a different name on it because you did it. It's a difference between a white lie and a black lie. It's a difference between major surgery and minor surgery. It's just, who is it happening to? Who's doing it? And if it's me sinning, then it's a minor sin. If it's you, it's this horrible, dark, terrible thing that's going to condemn you. But I can put a nice face and nice name on it if it's me and make it palatable to all us older brothers. Can't I? But have you ever told somebody it's wrong to do something and turn around and do that very same thing yourself? And we've already been through this, and everybody that was here, and if you weren't here, then you might want the chance to raise your hand, but nobody here raised their hand and said they were innocent when we went through that. And so the first principle that God will use to judge a man under law when he stands before him is, have you ever told somebody it's wrong to do something and then done that very same thing yourself? Then when you testify, and you can't lie to God, when you say, yes, I have, what have you just said? You said, I have sinned. What is sin? What is sin? Transgression of God's law. The second point in verse 14 and 15, right in that section, is everybody has God-given law. It's not just some arbitrary law that God pulled out. For when the Gentiles, who did not have the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these Gentiles who don't have the law become a law unto themselves. And they show the works of the law written where? On our hearts. Who's the heart writer? God's the heart writer. And so even man who does not have that written law, when he does by nature the things contained in the law, then this becomes a law unto himself. He has a law. Where did he get that law? He got it from God. Where did it start? Where did this awareness of right and wrong start? Garden of Eden. What was the name of the tree that God told Adam and Eve not to eat of? The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When they ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, what did they gain? The knowledge of good and evil. And from that point on, every man innately knows right from wrong. And right here, we got little flags that jump up everywhere, right? We say, wait now. Everybody doesn't think of right and wrong in exactly the same way. Well, that brings us, second point is, all men have God-given law. Regardless of where you live or when you live, there's an awareness of right and wrong about those eternal truth principles that were incorporated into the law of Moses. Thou shalt not kill. Does everybody in every society, everywhere, in every age have some awareness of a rightness and wrongness about killing someone? The answer is yes. Does it vary? Yes. What causes it to vary? Not that God put it on some people's heart and didn't put it on others. It's that we grow up in societies that teach us different things about rightness and wrongness of adultery and murder and lust and those kind of things. And so there are some people that have a very low awareness of right and wrong about murder or lying or adultery. There are others who have a very high awareness of right and wrong about those things. And the third principle, and by the way, where did they get this awareness of right and wrong? From God. From God, and then society, parents, teachers tweak that, don't they? But we have it. How do we know we have it? Principle number three, and Eric hit this one last week. Your conscience. The conscience bearing witness, he says. The conscience bearing witness. Witness to what? Witness to the fact that I have an awareness of right and wrong. It doesn't say where I draw that line of right and wrong. It just says that my conscience testifies that I have an awareness of right and wrong. Does everybody have a conscience? Yes. Can you abuse that conscience in such a way that it doesn't function properly? Yes, you can. How do you do that? By ignoring it. You ignore it long enough, it won't function. Having their consciences seared over as with a hot iron. And who do we defend and who do we accuse? I defend myself and my friends and my family. And who do I accuse? You. But our conscience testifying. What does it testify? Well, here I am. I'm the law keeper. I didn't know anything about the gospel. I stand before God to be judged. And one of the things, I haven't been there yet. I will be, and so will you. But standing before God, God reaches in, and Eric used this illustration last week. He reaches in, and he pulls the conscience out, and he puts it up here on the witness stand. He put the conscience in me, and so my conscience can't lie to him. I don't know what my conscience looks like. People have depicted it. You got this little angel on this shoulder, and what's over here? Little devil over here, right? And so part of you says, hey, whispering in your ear, you better not do that. Don't go there. And the other part of me is saying, there's this little devil on this shoulder saying what? Hey, it's fun. You have never had this much fun in your life. You don't know what this is like, right? And so it's going back and forth and back and forth. And my conscience is saying, don't go there. That's not right. Don't do that. And the closer I get to that line, where does my conscience operate? It operates where I draw my line of right and wrong. Are there some things that some people can do and their conscience won't bother them that other people do and their conscience does bother them? Yes. Why? Does that mean one person has a conscience, the other one doesn't? No. It means that your standard, where you draw your line between right and wrong on each one of these eternal truth principles, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, you draw a line on each one of those bar graphs. You remember? And that line right here, as long as you stay up here, everything is fine. You don't even know you've got a conscience. But as you begin contemplating doing something and you start getting close to that line, your conscience is kind of like this little backup thing that we got on vehicles now. It says, neep, 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 neep. And then it gets closer and it starts doing what? Neep, 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 neep. And then it gets to this solid scream, doesn't it? If you got to live with that scream all night, you're not going to sleep very well. That's your conscience kicking in, isn't it? And it operates at that level of right and wrong that you accept that. And that's one reason. And somebody came up to me a week or so ago and said something about, then all we have to do is just follow our conscience. No. We do have to follow our conscience. But is the conscience an accurate guide? Is the conscience an accurate guide? Paul stood before the Jewish council and said, I've lived before God in all good conscience unto this day. And you know what? One of the things he'd done? He'd kill Christians. He'd kill Christians. So, the conscience is not an accurate guide. It is accurate only in so much as you draw your line of right and wrong at the proper place. Are you with me? You still with me? That's why, as Christians, we have a responsibility. It is essential that we study God's Word, and we, if you'll allow the word tweak, we keep tweaking our understanding of right and wrong and bringing it in line with God. What He says is right and wrong. And is it possible, I'm chasing a rabbit here for a minute, but is it possible, do y'all know what that means? I said something in the other class back when I was teaching this about have to relick your calf, and not one person there knew what I was talking about. And probably 90% of people don't know what it means. But anyway, if you do, you can come up and tell me. If you don't, you want to know, come let me know. But whenever we start talking about our conscience and we start thinking about what it means, where it came from, how it operates, what it does, then there are some things about our conscience that we really have to give some effort to understanding. Because, and Paul will address this in Corinthians. He'll talk about our conscience. If you violate your conscience, you sin. And yet there are some people, and let's put this in areas of in gray areas, okay? Romans 14 areas where there's some latitude as to what you can do and what you can't do. There are some people whose conscience will allow them to do this, and when they do it, they do not sin. But there are other people whose conscience pricks them when they do it, and when they do it, they will sin. Now, for those of us that like everything black and white, we don't like that. We don't like that kind of liberty. And we don't deal very well with it. Because if I think it's wrong, you're supposed to think it's wrong. And if you don't think it's wrong, I'm going to do my best to hammer your head until you do understand that it's wrong. Right? But there are some areas, Romans 14, there are some areas where you can do something and I can do something, and they're a little different. And both of us can either be right, or both of us can be wrong, or one of us can be right and the other one be wrong. Now, you've got to study Romans 14 and passages associated with that about areas of liberty. But if you violate your conscience, you sin. That's what Paul says. And that's one of the reasons that it's a danger for me to insist on having my rights whenever somebody else is looking at me and they're saying, look at that preacher. He's doing this, and they think it's wrong. And Paul will say, why do I have my liberty judged by others? I think it's right. My conscience will allow me to do it. But because I'm the preacher and because I do it, they go ahead, they're emboldened to do it, he will say. And when they do, guess what I've just done to them? I've caused them to sin. Because I insisted on my rights. And it's none of your business, and I'll do what I want to do. And Paul says, if my eating meat causes somebody to stumble, guess what? I've had my last piece of steak for as long as I live. I won't eat it anymore. Wow. Now, this conscience is an interesting thing. But he says, our conscience on the day of judgment for the person who's the lawkeeper. We're talking about how and why a person's lost. God pulls that conscience out. He puts it up here on the witness stand, and he says to Ken Stegall's conscience, Have you ever told Ken it was wrong to do something and he did it? And my conscience has got a lot to say, unfortunately. Because I have violated my conscience. I wish I could tell you I haven't, but I have. And that very fact that my conscience will testify that he has told me something was wrong and I went ahead and did it, I'm guilty. And so here I am, the law keeper, standing before God. God uses three principles. Have you ever told somebody it's wrong to do something and do that very same thing yourself? Guilty. Well, did you not know any different? Did you not have a law that I gave you? I did. Your conscience. Have you ever violated your conscience? Guilty. 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 That's the whole point of Romans 1:18-3:20. For there is none righteous, not even one. God looked the whole world over. God's not limited by time, and he could see you before you were born. That gives people heartburn too. But he could. And he could look the whole world over and see if there was anybody righteous. And here, before too long, we'll go to Hebrews chapter 2 and we'll talk about what was required for the sin sacrifice. One of the things that was required was this: it has to be a sinless man. So God looks the whole world over from beginning to end, and he looks at Ken Stegall and he doesn't see a sinless man. And so God will send his son to become a man who will be sinless so that he can become the sin sacrifice. But he looked at me and he looked at you. And when I say man, I'm not talking about man as opposed to woman. I'm talking about mankind. He looked at every one of us. And guess what he saw? We're sinners. We're all sinners. And if you think you're a better sinner than somebody else, so what? Yeah, what does that mean? You know, I've told you the story before. I was selected in the eighth grade as the outstanding athlete in my school. We didn't win a single game. So I was the best of the losers, you know. So what's that got to, you know, big deal? You know, what are you going to, you know, you can brag in that little school about that, but you're not going to go out anywhere else and brag about that, are you? So if I'm lost, can you get any loster? Lostest, yeah. And so, three principles. Let's make sure we're all on the same page. Now, and pick up in verse 17. We're in Romans chapter 2, okay? And he says, remember the simple sentence in verse 12 through 16. He says, all who sin apart from law will perish apart from law. All who sin under the law will be judged by the law. And then verse 16, everything from verse 13, 14 and 15. My wife laughs at me because I had to take my glasses off to read instead of putting them on. 13 through 15 is a parenthetical that expresses those who, it talks about the Gentiles who don't have the law become a law. Okay? They have God-given law. And the simple sentence starts in 12. All who sin apart from the law will perish apart from the law. All who sin under the law will be judged by the law. And then you skip down to verse 16 to get the simple sentence. This will take place. This what? This judging, this perishing. This will take place on the day when God will judge men's secrets through Jesus Christ, as my gospel declares. Now, by the way, let's go back. We keep going back. And it's necessary that we do because we get things mixed up. We get salvation and being lost mixed up. We throw them all in the same bucket and we get all confused because we start talking about somebody's lost because they hadn't been baptized. That's not why they're lost. It's got something to do with why they get saved, but that's not why they're lost. This whole section is talking about, we picked it up in verse 18 of chapter 1, for the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against certain people. And we're seeing who those certain people are. And you know who is among those certain people? Me and you. We all are. And that's the point here. And now, through all this, and particularly when we've gone through chapter 1 and he's talked about these Gentiles and how wicked they are. You remember all that list that they're godless and, you know, inventors of evil and, you know, then all this. And the Jew is sitting back in his seat, and he's got this big grin on his face, and he says, Paul, you're the man. You're the preacher. Man, this kind of preaching I like to hear. Those wicked, sinful, sorry, no good for nothing, hell-bound Gentiles, put it to them. Put it to them. Send them straight to hell. That's where they belong. And then Paul turns and he says, point two. Now you, I'm in verse 17, verse chapter 2, you call yourself a Jew. You rely on the law and brag about your relationship to God. You know as well you approve of what's superior because you're instructed by the law. You're convinced you're a guide to the blind, a light for those who are in the dark, an instructor to the foolish, a teacher of infants. Because you have in the law the embodiment of knowledge and truth, you then who teach others, do you not teach yourself? Hey, use this up there preaching. Do you hear what you're saying? You who preach against stealing, do you steal? And what would they say to that? Heavens, no, we don't steal. But heavens, yes, they did. They did. They just called it by something else. You who say that people should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? No, I don't commit adultery. I never have in my life. Jesus said if a man looks upon a woman and lusts after her, what? He's committed adultery in his heart. That puts the bar in a different place than I want to put it for my... You see, I'm not the one who decides what's right and wrong. God is the one. And so he says, you who say that people should not commit adultery, you commit adultery. You who hate idols, do you rob temples? You who brag about the law, do you dishonor God by breaking the law? As it is written, God's name is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. And man, I mean, it's like this explosion that caught them blindsided. They weren't looking for this. They had never heard a Jew talk like this. He's saying, okay, you got all this straightened out about the Gentile in your mind and in your heart. But let me tell you something. You're not any better than they are. What are you talking about, Paul? What are you saying? You don't know what you're saying. Circumcision, he's going to illustrate it. Verse 25. Circumcision has value if you observe the law. We're talking about the law keeper here, all right? Person under law. But if you break the law, you become as though you had not been circumcised. If those who are not circumcised keep the law's requirement to flip the coin over, will they not be regarded as though they were circumcised? So what is he saying about circumcision? It's not the most important thing, is it? It's not this stamp that guarantees you you're going to go to heaven, is it? Isn't that what he just said? He said these Gentiles who are not circumcised, if they keep the law, they're better off than you are who've been circumcised. The one who is not circumcised physically and yet obeys the law will condemn you, who even though you have the written code in circumcision are a lawbreaker. Wow. He got the Gentile really good. And then he got the Jew really good, didn't he? A man is not a Jew if he's one outwardly. Let's see who the true Jew is. And by the way, you can pick that up. We won't get there in this study, but you can pick that up on over in about chapter 10 or so. He's going to build on this some more. Man is not a Jew if he is only one outwardly, nor is circumcision merely outward and physical. No, a man is a Jew if he's one inwardly. Circumcision is circumcision of the heart by the Spirit, not by the written code. Such a man's praise is not from men, but from God. And so what has he just said? The Gentile is a sinner. God's wrath is going to be revealed on the Gentile. And God's wrath is going to be revealed on the Jew. Didn't he? And he's going to say in just a moment now, we've concluded all men under sin. Let's pick up in chapter 3. By the way, you know that these chapter breaks were not in the original, right? This thought just continues on. Now, let's set the stage for 3. Paul has said some things about the Gentile that the Jew completely agrees with. Now he says some things about the Jew that have him rocked back on his heels. He's never heard anything like this before. This is the older brother. The older brother is being told, you are as lost as your younger brother. He does not believe it. He's going to have to be convinced. That might be us. And that's why I've said at the very beginning, when we talk about condemnation and how and why a person's lost, you'll get tired of this before we get out of it. But we've got to have it, folks. As long as you hold out some hope of your own righteousness because you've been baptized or you're a member of the church or because you've done this or you've done this, as long as that's the basis of your hope, we got some more work to do. Are there some essential things that you have to do? Is baptism essential for salvation? Yes, it is. Okay? That's on the tape from here on. So don't accuse me of saying it's not. But that doesn't punch your ticket forevermore to get yourself into heaven. And so, we come now to this section, and the Jew is reeling. He's never heard of something like this before. It never occurred to him that he was as bad or worse than the Gentile. He doesn't like this. And so he has some questions that comes to his mind that ought to just, I mean, they just pop right up. Here's the first one. And by the way, let me give you those questions, and the outline of this section is really easy from chapter 3, verse through 1 through 20. There's four questions and four answers. I'll give them to you real quick, and you can just write number one beside the verse if you don't mind writing on your Bible or if you're taking notes. First question is in verse 1. Second question is in verse 3. The third one's in verse 5. And the fourth one is in verse 9. That's 1, 3, 5, and 9. And everything between those is the answer to the questions. So it's real easy to outline. And the first question, what time is this class over? It's supposed to be over in 5 minutes. I hate classes being over. First question, what advantage then is there in being a Jew, or what value is there in circumcision? Can you understand why he would ask that question? This has been his ace up the sleeve here. I mean, when all else fails, he pulls it out, and this is his trump card. He's got it. This is the winning card here. I'm a Jew. I'm a descendant of Abraham. I have been circumcised. I have the law. I have an inside track to God. And all this other stuff out here doesn't really apply to me. God, I'm God's chosen. We're God's chosen. We're God's special people. And that's our trump card, and we play it. And nobody among us questions it. But Paul has just questioned it. And so now the question comes to their heart, what advantage is there in being a Jew, or what advantage is there in circumcision? And he will say, lots of advantages. Particularly because God chose you and he gave you his whole word. He gave you his own direct revelation to you. So, is there any advantage to being a Jew? Yes, sir. But sometimes that advantage, if you don't take advantage of it, is not a good thing. Because you had the opportunity and you didn't take it. And God's going to hold you accountable for that. That's what he just said right here. Yeah, there's been a lot of advantages in being a Jew. Second question. What if some did not have faith? Will their lack of faith nullify God's faithfulness? Don't read the first one and think that's the question. You got to put both of them together. Okay, God made a deal with the Jews. This is a Jew's reasoning here. God made a deal with the Jews. I'll be your God, you be my people. Okay? Okay, we will admit, here we are, we're the Jews, we're here, right here. We will admit we haven't been what we should be. We haven't held up our part of the bargain. Does that mean that God is not going to hold up his part of the bargain? So, not at all. Let God be true and every man a liar. Here's something you need to understand about God. If every man in the world lies through his teeth, God won't. God is faithful. God is righteous. God will do what God said He will do. Okay, I got to stop because I got something to hand out to you. I hate stopping. I need two or three volunteers to pass out something. This is something that I wrote a long time ago, and it has to do. Just grab a bunch of them and head out, if you would, with them. It is an exegesis of this section that we're going over. I didn't give it out to you before because I wanted you to listen to me. And I didn't hand it out first of class because you had been reading it. And I want you to listen to me because if you're not listening to it and following along with me, then I lose you. So take that and read that, and maybe it'll help clarify some of the things we've been talking about. If not, then come to me and we'll talk about it. We need to talk some more about law. And if you'll read the section in here on page 2 and 3, a brief study of law, then we can expedite our study on law some. Okay? Any questions you got burning right now? Comments? Criticism? Observation? Thank you. Class dismissed.